My wife, Holly, is a very private person, which means if she was here tonight, she would already be grimacing because I just mentioned her. She's a very private person. And when we first started dating, it took us a long time to move anywhere in a physical direction. And it took us even longer for there to be anything affectionate in public. You know, it was, I think, a year before she would hold my hand in public. We would be walking down some dark street holding hands, and then we'd walk underneath the street light. Off goes the hand. So it's like, we're just holding hands, babe. You know, you realize like there's a lot worse things we could do. We could talk about those. No. She's a very private person. And so early on in our relationship, goodbyes were really awkward. You know? So I remember one night we've gone on this long, long walk together because I would take her to those dark places where she would at least hold my hand. And so we came back from one of those long, long walks in the freezing cold in Indiana. And you know, I remember her just being just absolutely frigid. But we got back and we were coming up to her dorm, and we were in college at the time. And I was dropping her off. But since I knew that she didn't like any public displays of affection, and we were in a very lighted area, and we had never yet kissed, but we had at least held hands, but she wasn't going to be in for that, so she certainly wouldn't be in for a hug. So it was it went something like this. Well, good night. It was really, really fun to be with you, and good night. This is really awkward and weird. And I remember walking away from that night. It was late. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. We both had curfew keys by that time. I don't know if you get that pleasure here at Asbury, do you? No, sorry, rub it in. It was actually kind of fun for me, but I'll say I'm sorry. That'll make you feel better, and I'll still enjoy it. We had curfew keys. We were up late. And I was just also at that time beginning to start to try to discern the voice of God in my life, and it was a new experiment for me, and sometimes I was getting it, and sometimes I wasn't. No audible voice, just, you know, the thoughts that come that you think are from God, and I really do believe they are. As I'm walking back to my room, my house where I lived, away from her place, I felt one of those moments where it seemed like God might be speaking to me. And the thought that came to mind, because it wasn't something I would think of, was, don't you want to take a walk with me? And being a very honest person, like I apparently am, I said, no, I don't. It's almost 2 in the morning. Go to bed, God. And continued and felt stopped again. No, really, don't you want to take a walk with me? You said you wanted to learn how to love me. And the thoughts kept rolling. You're willing to take long, extended walks, getting lost with her. Why not me? Felt so convicted in that moment because I still really did not want to walk with God. But by the time I was almost to the door where I lived, my heart orientation had started to change. And I don't think that was me. I think that was the Spirit continuing to soften me and move me. And so I went on a long walk with God for the first time in my life that night. That was the beginning for me of this journey that I am going to try to talk to you about tonight. Last night, we talked about experiencing the love of God in such a deep, upending way that it so saturates who you are and gets down from up here all the way into the core of who you are so that it transforms you. Really experiencing the love of God. And without that, we can't love others and we can't love God because we love because first God first loved us, 1 John 4. But now we're moving into loving God back tonight. And I really don't think that you can understand tonight in anything else than a legalistic or works righteousness way until you have fully and deeply experienced the love of God. So if you start hearing tonight in a works righteousness way, warning, warning, tilt, 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 it's because you haven't yet fully embraced the radical, ragged graciousness of God. And I hope you will someday if you haven't yet. But tonight, to talk about loving God back, I want you to turn to Deuteronomy 6, which is a passage you should be familiar with. Deuteronomy chapter 6. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, fifth book of the Bible, last of the Pentateuch, towards the front there, if you're not familiar. Deuteronomy, second law, which is a way of saying second chance. It's a whole book that is a second chance for the people of God. The people of God messed it up first time through the wilderness coming up to Canaan, and they get this second chance, Deuteronomy. And God is a God of second chances. And here he is trying to communicate again what it means to live for him as a people, as a whole people, as a holy people set aside for the holy love of God and the holy love of others in a whole communal way. Deuteronomy 6. Do you have that? Would you stand with me? We're going to read that out loud together, starting in verse 4. The people of God for centuries have started their worship this way. And they, of course, they would it would sound more like Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. But we're not going to do it that way. So since that's probably not what you have in front of you, we're going to do it in the English versions that you have. And some of those are going to get a little jumbled, and I'm okay with that, because that will remind us that the Bible really isn't in English. That's just our translation. So if it kind of gets jumbled, don't worry about it. You'll have different versions, but we're going to read it out loud together, starting in verse 4 all the way through verse 5. So just two verses. We okay? 6, 4, and 5. We can handle that, yes? Let's read it together. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Fantastic. You may have a seat. Praise be to God for the word of God. Okay, so here is a passage about loving God. And you may know that a very famous person who is pretty well known around the world, named Jesus, said that this was one of the two parts of the greatest commandment. He was asked, what is the greatest commandment in all of Scripture? And he said, there are two. And they're like each other. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Leviticus 19. On these two hang all the law and the prophets. So this is Matthew 22. So the Matthew and Jesus says it that way. On these two hang all the law and the prophets. So this is the two-sentence summation of the Christian faith. We're going to talk a little bit more about loving others tomorrow morning a bit in a tangential way. But tonight, loving God. And what in the world does it mean to love God? Well, love is a thing we'll talk about as we go through tonight, but it's not a thing that we can fully understand or put our finger on. I used to think when I studied this verse that that was the most important word. And it may be the most important word for Christianity, but it's not the most emphasized word or phrase in here. Isn't that interesting? So love is there, but listen to what phrase is repeated three times. It took me a long time to figure this out. It'll probably take you 5 seconds. You're a lot smarter than me. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Do you recognize a phrase that was repeated three times? You're geniuses. You're dismissed. With all. Now, Hebrew writers, this, what they wrote on was so precious to them. I mean, if you're going to write something down at that time period, it was so expensive, hand-hammered, handmade, every little scroll of it. You didn't waste any words. But it's repeated three times here. That should tell us something. They weren't as wordy as I am. Because they would scrap it out on scraps of things and pot shards sometimes, getting things started, broken pot here, and scribble this out, or a piece of wood over there, scribble it out over there. And they would get it all set, or they would have said it multiple times orally before they would ever write it down. And by the time it was written down, man, it was so condensed. Like the story of Cain and Abel, it's like they boiled down everything into the most condensed and terse way it could possibly be said. So to say the same phrase three times means that's the deal. With all. So, whatever it means to love God, the most important thing that we need to learn about it is that it has to be with all. Which, of course, is the way God loves us, if you remember last night. Loves us so desperately and passionately and sacrificially that he would die to get us, and he has. In other words, he's loved us with all. And that's the only way that we can learn to love with all, is by facing that. And then this passage goes into the, sort of a Hebrew anthropology, these parts of the person. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Let's talk about them. Okay, so this will represent for us tonight in a strange and not very congruent way and awkward, the heart. Now, you may not know this, but Jesus actually misquotes Deuteronomy 6, the Matthean Jesus does. So in Matthew 22, what we just mentioned, when he says, don't notice that those aren't real. Don't notice that. When he quotes this, he gets it wrong. You've just read it. You've heard it repeated. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. The Matthean Jesus, when he quotes Deuteronomy 6, says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. That's different. So if you're a literalist and you think that one language should be translated one word to the next word, and there should be only one word that translates that word, then something's messed up. But if you understand the way language works, you understand that languages don't fit like neatly one-to-one like that. And so whether it was Matthew helping to adjust things into Greek or whether it was actually Jesus at the time making sure that we understood what the Hebrew was saying, when we're bringing forward what the Hebrew was saying, doesn't much matter. What I think was going on is that they recognized that the most important phrase was with all. And so with all, whatever the Hebrew meaning of heart was important. The Hebrew word is levav, and it could be translated either heart or guess what? Mind. So for the Hebrew anthropology, their way of viewing these things, the heart and mind weren't separated, weren't divided out, weren't bifurcated. That's Greek. So Hebrew, it was an integrated thing. And so your levav was kind of the driver's seat of your life. It was the place from which you made all of your decisions, put it that way. Whether you were making them affectively or intellectually or some other way or some mix between the two, didn't matter. The seat from which you made all of the choices in your life was your levav. So, reading Deuteronomy 6 and trying to bring it into the culture of that first century people, and making sure that nothing would get left out, forgotten, you couldn't just say heart or mind, or it wouldn't be with all for that people. So we didn't actually get it wrong. Got it right. Just didn't get it directly literal one for one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind. The driver's seat of who you are. What that tells me is, every single choice that you and I make is an opportunity for us to worship God with all. When you choose to get up in the morning or not, what you choose to eat or not eat, who you choose to spend your day with or who you choose not to spend your day with, what activities you choose to pursue or not pursue, what studies you choose to engage or not engage, how you approach your classes, your professors, how you approach your friends, your family, how you choose to spend your money, your time, your habits, your everything. Do I need to keep going? Every single choice you make, including the fact that you came here tonight, is an opportunity for us to love God, to worship God with all, every single one. Now, we don't always get that right. And if you didn't experience last night, you're already starting to feel legalistic. And perhaps you are anyway. It's not that. Experience the loving graciousness of God and then come to this. Get the flow of the universe right. But once you have that right and you see this way that God is, it's not that he's giving you obligation and duty. It's not lots of shoulds and ought tos and musts. Instead, it's, look, an opportunity, a can, a don't you want to? If God loves you so desperately, so passionately, so sacrificially, and you are overwhelmed and filled with that love, and it is just completely consuming you, then you're saying, how can I love God more? And God in this verse is saying, look at every single choice you have in your life. There's so many opportunities for you to find a way to love and worship me. That's the first thing. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind. And I want to come back to this verse, but I want to tag it to something that happens later, because I think later in this passage, the author starts to give us some sort of application points. So, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about when you sit at home, when you walk along. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on your door frames of your houses and on your gates. Does this sound obsessive to you yet? It is obsessive. I'm going to give you two application points from that little section that's unpacking the heart-mind part, I think. Two applications. You can write these down. Number one, romance God. We understand being obsessed with a person in this culture. We get obsessed with them. We think about them. We try to find ways to spend more time with them when you get romantically involved. You're texting, you're tweeting, you're poking. You're doing all kinds of weird things. I've done them too. We've always had our own versions. I remember writing a poem once for Holly, if you could call it that. I saw her car and went, oh, Holly. And she had this little Sundance, and so she called it Sunny. And there was Sunny. Oh, Holly. So I found a scrap of paper, and I wrote something down real quick, and she saved it. So I know that this is exactly what it says, because it's embarrassingly in a scrapbook. It says, Holly, I'm at your car. You're not near. You are far. Wonder where you are. Love, Dave. Now that's poetry. Good. Stuck it under her windshield. I was obsessed with her. I was obsessed with her. One time I wrote her a note laying in bed. How in the world am I ever going to get any work done when I'm thinking about you all the time? Because it really was. And she texts me today. I'm just in the middle of something. She texts me and she says, I'm really loving you right now. She's 6 hours away. We know how to obsess with each other when we think about romance. Love God. Obsess with God. Think about God as much as you can. Wrap him around your wrists. Print him up on your walls. Stick reminders in places. Write him notes. Take long walks with him. Whatever you would do to romance someone, find a way to do that for God. And if you're a guy in this room and you're saying, well, that sounds girly, get over it. Sorry, that wasn't for the girls. Just get over it. Get over your pride. Get over these narratives of what masculinity is or isn't. And just go all hog out to love God. It's the greatest pleasure you could have. Romance God. So obsess with God a bit. Second, memorize God's love for you. Talk about it when you're on the road. Impress them on your children. These commandments should be on your hearts. Talk about it when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses. And if the material they wrote on wasn't so expensive, they probably would have written more ways. Memorize God's love for you is one way of me saying what they're saying. If you think about God and talk about God and memorize the things of God and memorize what's in this book as a love letter towards you, a love letter that says this is the best way for you to live your life. It's not just being holy so that you can please God. It's being holy because your holiness is your happiness. That's God outlining the best life for you. And you memorize that and internalize that, then the flow of the universe will be going in the right way. And God's love will be driving you to love God and to love others, and not you driving your own train of worship and holiness and try harder, try harder, try harder. Doesn't that tire you? So those are the first two things. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and with all your soul. Now, the Hebrew word, of course, is nephesh, N-E-P-H-E-S-H, if you're transliterating it. And so this has nothing to do with nephesh and doesn't look like nephesh, but it helps to have something. So if this is the driver's seat of your life and every choice is an opportunity for you to worship God, then this is your nephesh. Now, it could mean self
or soul or spirit or animating force. Some people think it has something to do with the throat because that's where breath and voice come from. Both things that give us life and identify us as who we are. When you hear someone's voice, you know who they are. So when you pull all that stuff together about what nephesh means, with all your nephesh and all that nephesh could mean, I think the best way to put it is to say, love the Lord your God with all the choices that you make in your life, intellectually and emotionally. And then love the Lord your God with everything that makes you uniquely you. Everything that is uniquely you should not be sitting over here on the side from your ability to worship God. It's not as though we just must assimilate, worship like everyone else worships, love like everyone else loves, be like everyone else is. We must assimilate. That's not Christianity. Get everything that is uniquely you and bring that to the table as well. And build this growing tower of love to God in your life in a way that is also unique to you. There's this powerful verse in Isaiah, I believe it's Isaiah 29:11, that wrecked me one time in my devotions. It says, these people draw near to me with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Their worship of me is made up only of rules taught by men. I'm going to say that again. So these people draw near to me with their mouths and honor me with their lips. So they're singing the right songs. They're chanting the right things. They're even reading the right scriptures and saying them out loud. They're memorizing the doctrines. And they're getting all their little T's crossed and their I's dotted. And they're saying everything the way it ought to be said. And yet their worship of me is only made up of rules taught by men. They're only doing things that someone taught them to do. There's no freewheeling love of me that just bubbles out of the heart up into everything that is them and comes over onto me and I feel loved by it. It's just do, 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 follow, obey, assimilate. I started thinking, is there anything in my life that I do that nobody taught me to do? That I do simply because I love God. The more I thought about it, there was nothing. How about you? I wised up after last night with this little cold or allergies I've got. All I had was a paper towel last night and I was rubbing my scratchy face. Wasn't it embarrassing? I got a little hanky tonight. Do you have a way that you are worshiping God that nobody taught you to do, and you're not doing it because you have to do it or you ought to do it? It's not a rule. You just love God. And you're just searching. Show me some way to express this love for this great God who has loved me so much. How do I love him back? Show me a way. And you find some weird way that's just you. Do you have that? A friend of mine, I used to talk about days alone with God, still do sometimes. And if you haven't ever had a day alone with God, it's a great way to romance God, to spend a whole day with the Lord. He told me how often he'd tried to do that and how many times it had failed. And he said, I was always trying to do it somebody else's way. And he was living in Kentucky here at the time. And then he said, he's a Rich Mullins fan. He said, at some point, I just decided, forget it, the way everybody else does it. I'm just going to find a way for me. And he grabbed a stack of Rich Mullins CDs, and he got in his car. It was in the fall, and he just got in the car and started driving out of these backwood roads in Kentucky, you know, winding roads around Palisades and cliffs and rivers. It's just gorgeous here, isn't it? Don't you love this place? You should. If you don't, go out. Get out there. It's beautiful. He's driving around, and the fall colors are swirling around him, and it's beautiful. Rich Mullins was playing, and he started worshiping God, and he loved music, and he loved Rich Mullins. This was something unique about him. He started lifting one hand. This is how he tells the story. He started lifting one hand and worship as he's driving, and then get a little curvy, and then make a little curvy. And finally, he was getting so moved, he pulled off the side of the road, and his tears just flowing down his face, and both hands up in the air, worshiping God with this Rich Mullins song. And then he sees this old lady drive by, slowing down, thinking he's getting held up, you know. Put his hands down, waved, and then she's gone and puts his hands back up. Steve, I spent the entire day, the whole day. I went through every single CD. I don't know how many roads I drove. I got lost at some point. I just drove all over, and the beauty of God's creation surrounded me, and I was just in awe of what He'd created, and my hands were lifted, and then I was just worshiping and crying, and I felt so full. I felt like this is being alive. I'm really, truly alive. He loved God with a way that was unique to Him. That just came out of something that he was. Do you have something like that? I think that's what happened with David when he started twirling and dancing. And it embarrassed his wife. It just bubbled up in him. It was a way he longed to love the Lord. Oh, do you have things like that? I hope you do. Love God in a way that is unique to you, in a freewheeling way. So, first we said romance God, and second we said memorize His love for you. Third, worship God your way. I don't know what that way will be. Yes, we do assimilate. We do enter into the practices of the church and the liturgies of the community of God. And yes, we sing the same songs together. But is there anything that you do that nobody taught you to do? If not, perhaps it's not with all yet for you. All of your hobbies, all of your passions, all of your gifts, all of your skills can become ways of worshiping God. If you're a fly fisher, when you tie that beautiful fly and then cast it just right in front of God's creature, and that brook trout rises and sips at the water film and takes the fly you tied, and your rod goes up in the air and it dances on the line, that can be a way of worshiping God. If you're a mathematician and you study the structured, ordered universe that's been given, and you finally work out a problem that you were stuck on, and you can realize the fact that God's faithfulness is embedded all the way down into the consistency of His creation, that becomes a way for you to worship God. Those are just a few examples. I don't have time to give you them all. Your life is not long enough for you to find them all, because it's an ever-rolling adventure of finding new ways to love this God who will always love you more than you love Him back, no matter how hard you try. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, mind, and with all your soul. And then there's this funny last phrase, with all your, what's it say in your Bible?
Strength.
This bucket doesn't have anything to do with strength either. It's just sitting around. With all your strength. When I first started studying this passage, I got stuck on this. I was working with the Hebrew with my limited tools that I had to work with Hebrew. And I came to this, and it didn't seem to make sense. Because it uses this phrase, with all again, and then tags on a word that means very or much. It's not actually the word for strength. There's another word for that. And it was awkward, and I had a hard time translating it, so I went to my professor and said, this isn't making sense, and he told me that's because it doesn't make sense in the Hebrew, and blinked three times, as if that was the answer to my question. And we talked about it for a bit, and the thing that came to me out of that conversation, and it still sticks with me, I think it's true, it's as if language was failing the author. They wanted to talk to us about this love relationship with God, loving God in such a way that everything gets consumed. It's with all, it's with all, it's with all, it's with all. And really, if you think about it, loving God with every choice that you ever have to make in your life, and then loving God with everything that is uniquely you, what is left? Nothing. I mean, that's everything. I mean, if you love God with every choice you make, you love God with your emotions, you love God with your intellect, you love God with your volition, and then you love God with your uniqueness, your habits, your skills, your personalities, your traits, your hobbies, your friendships, your social class, your gender, your ethnicity. I mean, everything that makes you uniquely you. What's left? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. nothing. But it's as if the author was sitting there thinking, maybe there will be something left. How do we know? Or as if the author was saying, there is such an unpredictability about the way we love God. Or maybe there is such an unpredictability about God in God's self that we have to put some kind of bucket phrase that catches everything that could ever possibly come so that there is no tiny little corner of life left untouched by the love of God. And so they tag on this intensifier to with all. So it's with all your very, the word ma'od. It's the same word that in Genesis chapter 1, it says good, this is good, this is good. God saw that it was good. And then God creates us and says, Tov ma'od, very good, really good, exceedingly good. It's what you use in the Hebrew scriptures. If you say that a woman is beautiful, you'd say beautiful. But then if you want to say she's like really beautiful, like wow, you would say beautiful ma'od. And it just, it blows it up. It gets, it's like sticking a rocket booster on top of whatever it is you want to go faster and more powerfully. It's an intensifier. Whatever you stick it on gets more tense. And I'm trying to embody that for you. Are you with me yet? Ma'od. And so it's with all your very much, with all your exceedingly, with all your very all. So that if at any time in your life something new is revealed to you that you had not yet figured out how to put up onto this love tower towards God, like some weird thing like that. Does anybody know what that does? I think it's a medieval torture instrument. So you find that and you figure out how to love God with it. That's awkward. And then, or this, you know, it just represents something strange in your life. Doesn't matter. Love God with all of everything you could ever possibly imagine or come up with or discover or bump into or be confronted by the Spirit of God Himself. What are we saying here? I'm going to go back door to another part of the passage that I think helps us get at this part too. If you go farther down in the verse 13, there's this strange unpacking of this passage that most of us get hung up on, even in the holiness tradition. We don't understand why. It's there, but we love it. Verse 13 says, fear the Lord your God, serve him only, and take your oaths in his name. Do not follow other gods, the gods of the people around you. For the Lord your God who is among you is a jealous God, and his anger will burn against you, and he will destroy you from the face of the land. Happy joy. Weren't you talking about the love of the Lord yesterday? Where'd that go? That was more fun. What does the fear of God have to do with the love of God? Let me put it this way. This will be an easy answer for you. Do you love your sibling differently than you love your boyfriend or girlfriend? Oh, I'm sorry. Am I in the wrong state? So easy. It's just there. Of course you love them differently. God help us. Do you love your brothers and sisters in Christ in here that you know well in a different way than you love some stranger that you've never met on the street? You still love them, but it's not the same. And do you love your father differently than you love your teacher? Of course you do. Do you love your pastor a little bit differently than you show love to a coach? Of course. Although those examples get harder and harder for us, and we don't want to admit it. Because the truth is, the nature of a relationship helps define the expression of our love. The nature of a relationship helps define our natural and appropriate expression of love. And it's not as though they're less valuable. They're not less valuable. It's not as though the role defines their value. No, that's not the case. It's just that the nature of our relationship with them changes the expression of a love that is appropriate to the relationship. That's always the case everywhere, except in West Virginia. Just to get it away from you there. Maybe some of you are from West Virginia. You can throw something at me later. What does that mean with God? So even though we can talk about, in a metaphorical way, romancing God, God's not your girlfriend. God's not your boyfriend. You don't go into the closet and make out with Jesus. And even though God calls us friend, God is not like your other friends. God is holy and other and all powerful. And with a snap of his fingers, with the breath of his mouth, we would be destroyed. And God is the only being for whom our love is ultimately designed. Every other relationship that we enter into in love needs to have boundaries set upon it so that it does not become an idol. If you allow your love for someone to have no boundaries to it, and you would do anything for them no matter what it was, that's not healthy love. That's codependency or something else, except for God. Because God is the ultimate destination of your ability to love. And all of your loves need to be ordered toward that. And here's how it comes back to fear. Anytime that you begin to fear anything more than you fear hurting your relationship with God, you are heading down the road towards idolatry. That's what this passage is about. Do not follow other gods. The gods of the people around you. And why did the people around them follow those gods? Because they were gods of the rain. If it didn't rain, the crops didn't grow and they all died. So they were afraid of crops not growing. So the Hebrew people were immediately tempted to start worshiping these other gods just to hedge their bets because they were scared. They were scared the crops wouldn't grow if they didn't worship these other gods. We don't think we're like that. And then we're more afraid of being poor than we are afraid of hurting our relationship with God. We don't think we're like that. And then we're more afraid of somebody's opinion of us than we are of God's opinion of us. We don't think that we're like that. And then we're more afraid of being uncomfortable than we are afraid of hurting our relationship with God. Anytime you start to fear anything more than you fear hurting your relationship with God, you're taking a step down the road towards idolatry. And I do not mean to shame you or guilt you or beat you down. Every human being who has ever lived on the face of this planet has walked down that road. But God is saying, if you want your life to be the fulfilling life that it can be, everything needs to go into this tower. And if it's something that doesn't fit down here, into the bucket. And how can I put that in a way that wraps it together? This is the way I would put it. We've said romance God. We said memorize God's love for you. We said worship God your way. Assuming, of course, so that you're also embedded in the worship of the church and the liturgy to the church. Here's how I would wrap this all up. 4. Always say yes to God. Because it's with all your very all. No matter what God asks you to do, or where he asks you to do it, no matter where God tells you to go, or when he tells you to start heading that way, no matter what God asks you to say, or whom he asks you to say it to, no matter what God asks you to give up, or to take on, always say yes to God. Because there's no other way to truly love God. And he is a jealous God. He loves us so desperately, so passionately, so sacrificially, he would die to get us.
And if you're responding in kind, you will do the same for him. Here's a 3-sentence summary of my testimony. Sentence one, I threw my life away, but God caught it before it could hit the trash can. Sentence two, therefore, all of my life is in God's hands. Sentence three, I wouldn't want it any other way. Phil's going to come back up and he's going to lead us in a song of worship. But here's what I'd like to ask you to do. I want you to enter into a moment of prayer, and I want you to consider all the things God might ask you to do. All the worst things. Where might he ask you to go that you're absolutely terrified to go? What might he ask you to give up? What might he ask you to suffer or endure? And I want you to face them. I know that's not like the typical altar call, you know. But I want you to actually think about them and wrestle with them. And if you can come to a point tonight, it's okay if you can't. I hope you can. But if you can come to a point tonight where you think, well, no matter what those things are, I will always say yes to God. I do love God. I want, if God is helping me and God enables me, as long as he does that, and he will, I will say yes to God. And here's what I'm going to ask you to do. At some point while he's singing, I want you to stand up and make your body a love tower to God and just put both hands in the air, which is the universal sign of surrender. Somebody puts a gun in your back, both hands in the air. See, I have no weapons and I can't hurt you. And I want you to worship God, saying to him with your hands, no matter what, no matter where, no matter when, no matter who, no matter how, no matter how long, I'm saying today, it's yes. If you can't do that, it's okay. Just stay in your seat with your eyes closed. Don't worry about anybody else and pray. Rather, you be honest. Don't lie to God and others. Who cares what they think? Who cares what I think? Don't care about that. You deal with God. And if you can come to that point, make that absolute surrender statement to God. God, all of my life, all of my person, with all, I love you as my Lord, my master, no matter what you do. Would you bow your heads with me? Lord, I pray that you would start bringing the things to mind that we most resist surrendering. There's no point in this being an easy moment. That doesn't help us love you. It doesn't help us move forward. Bring to our minds the things we honestly need to deal with. And Lord, I pray that your Spirit would enable us to lay them on the altar of our hearts. Help us, Lord, to love you with all. You keep praying. And if God leads you, you stand where you are and show him what you want your life to be.